Thor. The hangar's house. How's your face? I was sitting at a table in the hangar's house. The building was quite near the front gate, sitting in plain sight. This was the official lower-level way to reach the Taker's Guild. Of course, the Guild is where you think they aren't, but they're also where they say they are, which means they have little to fear from barons and dukes, and they have even been known to flout a king. No crown sits so sure that a knife in the dark may not topple it. I had noted the square wooden sign with our hanged man holding his own noose. Good sign, that. Different colours of wood inlaid and a border of gold leaf. Also, a gold livre coin nailed to the hanged man's free hand because nobody would dare to take it. A Gallardian lion, I noticed. Did I mention I loved those? The woman sitting across from me reading my lamb parchment ledger sheet was distractingly pretty. She appeared to be about 19, but the hairs on the back of my neck told me she was magicked, so she might have been older than the cronish owlet miser I had just left. Nobody's managed to slap it off me yet, so no complaints. The girl might have broadened her waifish smile a hair's breadth. She might not have. Behind her, an assassin adept, who had so little fat on her you could count her muscles through her tight but giving woolens and silks, lounged against the bar, just lounged lazy as the long day, as if she weren't threat made flesh. It was hard not to stare at the adept. You could tell from her blackened neck, cheeks and forearms she was inked almost from crown to soles in dark glyphs that would let her disappear, drink poison, spit poison. I had seen an adept at the low school fly, actually fly. There were maybe 100 of them in the world, or maybe only 20. Whoever knew wasn't saying. I stopped reading the glyphs on the adept's skin before anyone caught me doing it. I wondered what the clock tattoo on her chest did. The false waif checked the seal on my document against the one in the huge book slouched open before her, then wrote 1T1Q14S on each. She passed a witness coin bound to her wrist over the trounce, queening and 14 shillings on the table, then fed them to a leather sack which she tossed to the assassin adept, who ferried them behind the bar and appeared to descend the stairs, though she had just as likely disappeared upstairs. "Staying tonight, prank," the maybe young woman said, definitely broadening her smile. A prank is the lowest thieving rank, but a true thief, not a scarecrow, and that's something. I was made a prank at the low school in Pigdenay. Assuming I clear my debt, complete another year of study, and or pull off a notorious caper or three, I promote to fetch. Then, should I further distinguish myself in all the wrong company, I may earn the title of fawn. A fawn in myth has deer's legs. You'll not easily catch a fawn. Has a nice ring, doesn't it? One of the guild's strengths is its poetry. It makes you feel you belong to something not only unopposably strong, but also wickedly sly and clever. Most of the best of us are content to remain fawns because the last level is for ascetics and the half-mad. The last rank of thieves, called famines, takes an oath of hunger, and they further swear to pay for nothing. What they cannot steal, the rest of us provide for them. But even the older and slowed down among them earn their keep by running schemes, planning for the able-bodied, and teaching. I'd learned under the baton of a famine or two. My interviewer hadn't closed the book yet. "It says you favour tall girls, is that true?" Even as she spoke, her legs lengthened, and she was looking down at me where we had once been level. I felt a pleasant but embarrassing sensation that caused me to cross my legs. "It's a new moon tonight, you know. Most propitious for first couplings. One gold queening and I'm yours till midnight. If you knew what I've done to get that money. If you knew what I could do to make you forget. Who's going to watch the shop while I wreck your womb and enslave your heart, I mean? I had them both removed. And she will," she said, nodding at an older but still lovely woman who had appeared behind the bar. A second look confirmed it was the same girl who sat across from me now, only 20 years older. This girl was no mere secretary or whore. She was quite probably a worry, a high enforcer, taking direct orders from the problem, think mayor. My skin flushed warm with an ugly, seething jealousy. However she had doubled herself, whether grafting, echoing, or somehow bending time, I would never do magic that strong. Never. Never, I said. Never what? She said, pressing her tongue to the corner of her mouth and letting it retreat. I'll never get this tattoo off me if I don't. I trailed off, watching the place her tongue had been, enjoying the hum of the erotic cantrip she was working on me. Pay the family, her mouth said. Yes. What if I told you I had work for you? I'd say keep talking for as long as I get to watch your mouth move. I have work for you, she said. Before I could respond, she pressed a witness coin to my head and magicked pictures into my mind. I saw. I was running in the cold at sunset. I was a woman, a youngish girl, pressing a witness coin into my head and turning to look behind me. Somebody yelled at me in Ostrom's language, Gunnish, which I don't normally speak, telling me not to look. I saw a tower of two colours in ruins, its stones collapsed. I saw a massive statue toppled on its face. The king's bodyguard formed up, presenting wingtip spears to a shadow coming out of the dust. They were marching backward with great discipline despite their terror. Huge drums beat, strange horns lowed, and everyone was yelling. Stones flew through the air, and arrows. A ram horn sounded a lamenting retreat. More shadowy figures could be seen beyond the wreckage of the keep, each of them the height of two men and built like barrels. They held axes with bronze heads the size of children's coffins, and slings that could hurl stones a man would want two hands to lift. Some held the trunks of trees to their belts as cabers. One chucked just such a tree, and it spun and hit the halberd men, killing or crippling as it went. The rest of the king's guard ran. A hand clutched at me and spun me, and a woman with a big emerald on a gold choker shouted into my face with wine breath to run, just run, and somewhere a child screamed. Everything went black, and then I was standing on a sort of rocky hill, watching small figures stream out of the broken city in the last light, watching large ones stream in. Fires chuffed black pillars into the sky, reflected on the face of a large calm lake or bay. Crows and gulls wheeled over a battlefield just beyond the breached west walls. I was cold. Next, I was a blonde girl in wobbly candlelight, looking into a mirror with this coin stuck to my head, blood from a scratch on my hairline slimed on my skin. I wore the emerald choker. I was aware of a dagger at my left side, a dagger I knew how to use very, very well. I said my name, which wasn't mine, and my hair turned brown. I said in Gunnish that I had paid my debt. I stared at the tattoo of a rose on my cheek, barely visible in the candlelight. I said, "Get it off me." I said it again, dead-eyed, and I shuddered. And everything went dark. A witness coin was powerful magic, and so far as I knew, its images were always true. I had just seen something not known in man reach for 700 years and more. This was a giant's army. One giant was formidable enough, but they were said to live in small clans beyond the Thrall Mountains, content to milk their giant hill oxen and enslave small folk stupid enough to go too far west. 5 or 10 at once was the most you were like to see. That they had banded together and crossed those treacherous mountains in sufficient numbers to lay low a city's walls, crush its guard and send its people running to the foothills, that was something awful and new to living generations. Had we survived 30 years of tussle with the biters just to be tread over by biggins? Not that Holt and the Eastern Kingdoms were soon to fall under their shadow. Hrava, the capital city of Ostrom, was 8 weeks' hard travel west of Holt by ass or ox cart, a season's walk, or a rotten month at sea away. 6 kingdoms lay between here and there. But how numerous was this army? What did it want? Could the kingdom stop it if it meant to trample east and east all the way to the Mithrine Sea? She interrupted my reverie, taking the witness coin back and giving me a not unfriendly pinch. We believe a certain spant you met on the road is going to Ustrim, probably to the city of Hrava. You will go with her. Win her confidence if you can. If not, follow her unseen and await further instruction, the Knotweef said. The assault of that kingdom by giants has set large wheels in motion, and the guild has an interest in how those wheels turn. The particulars of your mission are better not known to you at this time. If it becomes necessary to tell others why you're going, tell them you are to recover certain magical items held in the reliquary of the King of Ustrim, among them the Keshite Arrow Wand, a Ring of Catfall, and the Hardstone Torque. That last, what's it do? I said. Make old husbands stand like young ones? No, but I like the way you think. The way her tongue kissed her upper teeth when she said, think, made it so I couldn't stop looking at her mouth again. Time is not your friend, Kinch, she said. The spant will not dawdle, but see that you push her when you may, to make haste, and do not delay her by your own folly, or it will cost you more than coin. Today is the 19th of Ashes, and the moon shows the inky face we nightlings love so well. Try to make Hrava by the 1st of Vintners, 2 bright moons hence, though the gods only know what will happen there by then, with the city now fallen. All your talk of moons has lit my blood, I said to her. Half a queening? For just half the night? She smiled at me now with a mouthful of rotten teeth, worse even than those of the pawnbroker. You get what you pay for, she said. I practically ran out of there.